We got a Black Hawk down. We got a Black Hawk down.
Can you spell it?
D-J-A-N-G-O. The D is silent.
I'm gonna need you to go ahead and come in tomorrow.
And this is?
Lilu Dallas Smoothie Pass.
This boy is fueled like fire! So start melting, ladies, because the boy is hotter than hot. He's hot, hot, hot!
Diane, it's 6:35, and you are at the Good Trash Genre Cast, and we are so glad to be gathered around a table once again to talk about the low art and find the high art in it. We're going to find that there's actually really, really good trash, and we're doing our small screen September. We're looking at TV series, and we're going to be looking at Twin Peaks. But before we do that, we need to do some introductions. To my left.
Dustin, my name is Dalton Stewart. Listener, if you don't mind my saying, this is a damn fine cup of coffee.
To my right.
I am Arthur Gording, reminding you not to drink the coffee. There was a fish in the percolator.
My log saw something last night, and it will tell you later.
What did your log see?
My name is Dustin Sells.
What'd your log see, Dustin?
Well, the owls are not always themselves. That's all I can say.
Okay.
Oh, we're gonna, it's a weird episode.
It's a weird show.
It really, truly is, and weirdly wonderful. And we're gonna talk more about that. I'm so glad that my pick got to come up this week and do this. Now, there will be spoilers later. We will try to bracket parts of the show with some of the biggest spoilerific things because the mystery is part of the fun of the show. But we do want to begin with a synopsis. Hopefully you have seen the show, or at least seen the episodes in question. And that way you can be more cognizant of the conversation as it goes forward. But we do want to give the voice of the cinema an opportunity to give us probably the briefest of all synopsises, I would guess. But if you would, Mr. Arthur Gordon, sir.
An idiosyncratic FBI agent investigates the murder of a young woman in the even more idiosyncratic town of Twin Peaks.
Excellent.
Idiosyncrasies ensue.
They do. She's dead, wrapped in plastic. There's going to be...
Don't tell the sheriff I cried.
Oh, my. It's a show. It's a cult phenomenon. It is a big deal. It is the early 90s, and we are going to discuss that, and we're going to give some analysis to what's going on in the show. But before we do that, we want to give you an idea of taste, where we're coming from. Thumbs up, thumbs down. I begin to my right. Mr. Arthur Gordon, if you would, tell us what works and doesn't work about Twin Peaks.
I tried to prepare this week. I really think, for me, the jury is still out on how I feel about the show fully. I hate the pilot. I'm not going to lie. The pilot kills me.
Mm.
And it's not until, I guess, probably it feels like the halfway mark or over the halfway mark when the agent shows up.
It's about 30 minutes into the pilot, I think. I think I checked the time.
Yeah.
Which is where that picked up for me. I'm kind of
when he shows
here.
Up, it adds a whole new influx of life into the show, I think.
Right. Well, it's just sad, right? I mean, yeah. You're just sad for half an hour.
But
it's 90s sad, which is like...
Yeah.
Regardless.
90s broadcast TV, sad, let me phrase it. Mm-hmm.
But I think by the time I got to the third episode, and I've started the series before and I just never got around to finishing it, but there's something about that third episode, I think, that really starts to hook you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fun thing about it this week, though, is my mom's been in town. And so this is one of the few genre cast things I've actually watched with somebody else. And she's been hanging around watching this with me. And my mom is hooked. She's at home right now watching it.
Nice!
Wow, that's cool.
She's really enjoying it. My mom's also a fan of our show. And so she's a big nerd. That's where I get my nerdness from.
Thanks,
Arthur's mom.
As we first started watching the show, she was sitting there like, that guy looks familiar. Where do I know him from? She's like, that guy looks familiar too.
There's a lot of those.
Kyle MacLachlan, he's in Dune.
Yeah, he is.
My mother's a huge Dune fan.
That's awesome.
And so she's seeing all these people. Dune, Big Ed was also in Dune. There's another character.
He's a frequent Lynch collaborator.
Likes to recast people.
Yeah.
He does.
And so it's been fun. She's been watching. But I think, and the thing about it is, I think my mom's been getting the show at a level I haven't been getting it.
Hmm.
And so I think that's interesting, and it ties, and it's not an age thing, because I'm going to make this comparison, and I think there's something you're picking up on there, but my mom, the constant thing, she's like, this is just, it's making jokes on every old movie and every old noir film there is. Just continue. She's like, I don't think I'm supposed to be laughing, but I am laughing out loud. I told her, I was like, I think you are supposed to be laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so she's saying, you know, the actors are hamming it up.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're just chewing the scenery, she said. And so her phrase for the show is, it's at the edge of cheese. Or at the edge of camp. At the edge of camp.
At the edge
it
of
is.
Camp.
Oh, yeah. It rides that edge hard. Yeah. That was something I did like about it.
She having a blast watching it. And so cool. For that, I think it's fun. Mm-hmm. And so, you know what? I'll probably try and finish the series out and give it a fair shake.
So do you know what happens?
I do not. I do not know
how it
ends.
Do you want me to tell you the killer?
I don't care.
Okay, we'll see.
Maybe we'll tag it on post-show.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe we can
We'll just set it up. The suspect list as the show progresses. I'll reveal it.
Dun, dun, dun.
We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, thank you, Arthur. Mr. Dalton Stewart, do you like this? Does it work? What do you think?
Well, I have not seen a moment of the show before. Not a second of it. The only familiarity I have with it is, you know, my familiarity with cult classics and a segment they did on it on I Love the 90s. Mm. So that is my experience with Twin Peaks so far. I'm with Arthur. I do too. I'm not sold yet. I like it. I don't love it.
You haven't seen episode 3 yet.
That's true. In full disclosure, I did not make it through the required viewing. Kind of had a busy week. I made it through the pilot, which is really long, and the second episode. And I agree with Arthur. That pilot is garbage until Kyle MacLachlan shows up, and it gets really kind of awesome and great. And the thing I like most about the show is one of the things I like most about the show that kicked off this marathon, Buffy, is that it does this really great job of mixing this really wacky kind of deadpan sense of humor with this really, like, completely earnest, soapiness.
Yes.
It is very soapy. Earnestly soapy. And you know, it's not... taking the piss out of being soapy. I think
it is. You know, they've got the whole Invitation to Love soap opera that plays the whole time on the television that everybody's watching.
I think I've seen that yet.
Oh, my goodness. So they are...
It kind of happens in the background.
Yeah, okay. It's on television
well,
that people watch.
I mean, I guess they are, but at the same time,
it's the
like, some of the... right. Some of the very... The soapy beats are played very straight, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think you can only... Doing something ironically only goes so far. There has to be a certain core of sincerity to it, and I think that is something that the show does, is winkingly making fun of things while really sincerely embracing them. And that's something that works for me about the show. And the other thing is just the really weird... It's really funny. It's really funny. And I can see why your mom was like, am I supposed to be laughing right now? Because it kind of catches you up, because it's not until Kyle MacLachlan shows up, and that's one of the weaknesses, is it kind of kicks the comedy into overdrive when he shows up. And it's just like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Right. And it's awesome. It's almost as if Kyle, Agent Dale,
Cooper.
Dale Cooper, Agent Dale Cooper, coming to town, unlocked something that was already in Twin Peaks, Dustin's making a face. And
the quirkiness manifest?
He has allowed the quirkiness to become manifest. And from what I understand about the end of the show, which is a little bit, there might be some validity to what I just said. I might have just cracked the code. I might have just seen the code of the Matrix. But it works really well in that when he shows up, it's like the town wakes up to something that was already there, and everyone just loses their damn mind in a great way. I'm interested. I'll probably keep watching. It's going to take backseat to my Buffy rewatch.
Well, that's fair.
And Grand Theft Auto V, which is killing my sleep schedule right now. But I like it, and I fully intend to keep watching, because it's interesting. I'm really interested, and it's really funny, and it's got a great cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Hey, you know who Donna's mom is?
It's Mary Jo Deschanel,
right?
Yeah,
Zoe Deschanel's mom.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was funny. There's lots of familiar faces. Yeah.
Zoe and Emily Deschanel.
In the wheelchair, though?
Donna's mom.
Donna's mom in the wheelchair.
In the wheelchair.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Also? Oh,
yeah, Monkey's uncle.
Also?
Also?
What was I going to say?
I don't know.
In this.
Piper Laurie, is it? Have I met her yet? In episode 2, I kept looking for her because I know Piper Laurie's.
Piper Laurie is she runs the plant. Her brother married the Asian lady,
and that is the one complaint. Real, other than the weakness of the pilot, the other complaint I have of this show is the cast is too damn big, and that's something I know a lot of people have said about my favorite show, The Wire, is jumping, which I didn't have this issue with. just to compare with The Wire, but with Twin Peaks, I had an issue that I know people had with The Wire, is it's so hard to keep track of who everyone is. And it, The Wire almost...
You kind of fall into
The way it. The Wire plays is that it's almost like, don't worry about it. The way this played, it seemed like I need to be worrying about every second of it, because there was so much, almost every scene seems very integral to the plotting. So I was kind of like, oh, God. But, I kind of figured that would, you'll just get the hang of it,
right?
Which is what I tell people watching The Wire, so there you go. But apart from that, I like it. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. This is the first time I've ever found Laura Flynn Boyle really attractive, and I know that's apropos of nothing, but I wanted to say it, because she's really pretty in this.
Yeah.
And I like the biker guy. I like the casting of him. He's just dopey enough to play it right, but there's a certain sincerity to him that I really like.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen that actor in anything else, but I like him.
I don't know him.
And Cobblepot.
He looks so familiar. But
yeah.
I don't know if
he's got a very much a... I'm not great with names today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I can't even think of a movie right now. That's Christian Slater. Good Lord.
No.
He's got very much a Christian Slater look to him.
Like almost. A heavier Christian Slater, yeah.
Oh, he's much stockier, but in the face, he's got very much a very sincere dopiness that I find endearing, that I like about that character. So I'm intrigued. I think all the characters are interesting, though they are myriad and hard to follow. I like it. So that's it.
Okay. Well, obviously, I picked the show.
You did, so.
I believe Twin Peaks is a national treasure. And it is wonderful, lots of fun, crazy, kooky, weird.
Yeah.
I had to sneak around to catch episodes. I was quite young, junior high, pre-junior high, when it aired. It was quite scandalous at the time.
Hey, Dustin, ask me how old I was.
How old were you?
When did this premiere?
90, I think.
What did it premiere in the fall?
I think so.
I probably wasn't born yet.
Oh, yeah.
When it premiered.
Shut up and die.
I was four.
So what, it was scandalous at the time.
I don't know.
I noticed the rating on Netflix said TVMA.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was a big deal that this show was on the television. It was spicy.
Because this was HBO stuff.
It was spicy prime time.
Was it?
In 90. And so it was banned in my house. I snuck around, caught some episodes, and then really didn't catch much of it. And then I actually watched it probably 3 or 4 years ago.
Did this air on ABC?
I believe so.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
You know, CBS, I believe, owns the distribution to it now. But ABC, I believe, is the air company. But loved it. A lot of fun. Watched it, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when my explorations into surrealism began in earnest. And it's a great show. I mean, it's my favorite TV show. I actually rewatched this show in similar ways to what you guys have said about Arrested Development and of Buffy.
Mm.
It's one of those things I watch. I think the problem with this show is that it is far too far ahead of its time. The reason why this show only lasts 2 seasons, because it is a pure, serialized, event-driven sort of drama like what we see lots of now. In an age before DVR, you had to program a VCR.
If you were going to miss an episode.
A 1990 VCR in order to miss an episode and keep caught up with this show. And, yeah, that's why it didn't make it. I mean, I think that is if this show was around the age of DVR, it would have made 7 seasons.
I'd say that's definitely... Well, and again, you know, you got to remember the state of television in the early 90s. Is there's not a lot of serialization going on.
No.
I mean, you got Homicide: Life on the Street, but that's a serial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a crime serial, so it's not a lot of serialization.
Monster of the Week kind of thing.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, definitely. I think you can feel the influences of Twin Peaks on Buffy, on The X-Files, on... a lot of these shows that went on for 10 years that are hallmarks of the 90s and the early 2000s, I think you can see the thumbprint of Twin Peaks on those.
Absolutely.
Significantly.
So, love it. Thumbs way up for me. I think it's fantastic. So, there we go. Let's do some analysis, though. Because, you know, there's meat. There's a little bit of meat.
There's meat to be had.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on here.
There's lots of meat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like an arc of meat. I think. It's a lot of animals.
Yeah.
It's much meat.
An implausible amount, in fact.
Correct.
Anyway.
So, we are going to do that. I begin to my left with Mr. Dalton Stewart. If you would, sir, what say you?
Well, I say one more thing that I forgot to mention before getting to my analysis.
I said, no, you don't.
Well, okay. I'm going to say it anyway. Plot-wise, it is almost silly to the necessity of the plot, how many people in this town have a raging... turgid something for Laura Palmer.
Yeah.
It is redonkulous. It is nonsensical how many people in this town are in love with her. Literally everyone.
There's a line.
Listen to me. Literally every person, man, woman, and child, and beast, in this town had some sort of attraction to Laura Palmer, be it carnal or otherwise. It is ridiculous.
It's true. You know, there's a line.
She's kind of a homely-looking blonde girl. I don't get it.
In 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yes.
Where,
I love that movie.
Where Heath Ledger is finding out everybody's in love with this Bianca girl, mm-hmm. right? And he has to date Kat to... Mm-hmm. do this. And he says, what is the deal with this chick? She got beer-flavored nipples or something?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's...
Yes, exactly.
That is really the deal that we're dealing
yes.
with here.
It's ridiculous. And I just am like, what in the world? That's a great movie. It's an underrated classic. Rest in peace.
Analysis.
My analysis here is really something very much American, very Americana-centric, I think. And that is America's fixation with small towns. America's... I would go as far to say as fetishization of small towns, both small town living. Yes, Dustin?
I want to include a note about the small town. The town size is actually 10,000 larger than it should be.
What,
the original writing of it, it was going to be, I forget what the exact population.
It's like 51,000,
I think. 51,201. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be 1,201. And the production company said, no, we've got to make it a bigger town or no one will care.
Huh.
But it's written totally like a much smaller
yeah.
town.
Yeah, and it says that it's...
This is Mayberry Unhinged.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, and it says it's 50,000 people, which is...
Bullcrap.
I mean, a pretty big city, but obviously, clearly, when you watch the show, you can tell it's only supposed to be about 1,000 people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's blatantly yeah. obvious.
They have a general store. What do you want for you?
Exactly. They have a general store and one gas station, and it's mom-pop owned. My point is America's fetidization with small-town living is that it is simpler, it is cleaner... It is more ideal.
Yeah.
It is more moral, in
yeah.
fact. And that is what I think Lynch is playing on here, is something that's, you know, frequently comes up, is Mayberry Unhinged, as you put it. It is that everyone is deeply screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
People in small towns just don't talk about it quite as much because there's not an outlet for counterculture to
yeah,
speak of. And that's the thing that I think is really working at play here in Twin Peaks. And the thing I liked about it a lot was that people in small towns be crazy. There's crazy folk everywhere you go.
Yeah.
And sometimes they just happen to be more of them in one geographic place than another. And Twin Peaks just happens to be ripe with the crazies. And that's something I think that really works here is this deconstruction of the myth of the American small town.
Which is something Lynch does a lot anyway.
Yes,
that's
and
what
Blue
Velvet,
Velvet is.
Yeah.
I know that I'm aware that this is a theme he likes a lot. But I just feel that that's really something that's coming through prominently here. And I'm sure... that's something he chose to revisit, something I'm aware he visits to some extent in Mulholland Drive, is this idea that the metropolis and the small town really are not all that different. It's just a matter of population.
Right. Density, yeah.
Exactly. So really, and I think that's what anchors this show for me, is Agent Cooper comes to town with his own weirdness, and his big city weirdness unlocks the small town weirdness of these people that's already been dwelling beneath the surface. Leading to the murder of this girl. And the murder of this girl, in conjunction with Agent Cooper coming to town, really brings to surface the weird sexual proclivities of these people, their weird obsessions with silent running curtains and logs.
Right.
And spiking each other's beer and fish and percolators and damn fine coffee and cherry pie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
Those are David Lynch's communion elements. Cherry pie and
black coffee.
Black coffee.
Those are my communion elements.
And I would go to that church.
I made a face. You can do the math for yourself there. My point is, I got derailed. But my point is that's what works about. Oh, you're fine. That's what works about this is the weirdness, and I think that is why it's allowed to become a cult classic. Because as your mom so brilliantly pointed out, Arthur, is it just rides that line of camp, and camp it, to me is one of the purest elements of becoming a cult classic. It's one of the necessities of becoming a cult classic. And this show just takes itself just enough seriously and takes a piss out of itself just enough. And
yeah.
I think that's what works here. And I think that's really, if you want to get into social analysis, I think that's really where you need to start is the depravity of small towns.
Yeah.
This idea that... This is something that writers... just by nature, the people that become writers approach a lot, is that the most sociopathic people around are the alpha males, the people that society celebrates, and the outcasts are the most sensitive, most interesting people around. And obviously, there's a little bit of a rider self-inflation, but there's also some truth in this, and I think this is the danger of romanticizing small towns or these places in America, this the quote real America that's dangerous is this glorification of the alpha mindset, of the violent mindset, of the mm-hmm. competitive mindset, and it is that it leaves no room for the outcast, for the sensitive person, for the biker, which it's weird how much bikers are hated in this town.
Yeah.
Did Sam Crow set up shop? Is there a charter? Is there a charter of the Sons of Anarchy in Twin Peaks? Twin Peaks chapter? Because they really hate bikers in Twin Peaks. But there is no real rallying place for people who aren't violent. And the people who dominate this town are the mean and the evil. And I think that is part of, again, Lynch's deconstruction of the small town, is that when all you glorify is competition and victory through domination, this is what happens.
Yeah.
And that's what I've got for analysis, guys.
Excellent, excellent. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what analysis do you bring, sir?
This cherry pie will kill you. I think, Dustin really, I think, hit the nail on the proverbial head, calling this show ahead of its time. And I think that's probably the biggest thing to be said about this film, or show, sorry. Old habits die hard.
So you do normally.
Anyway.
I'm excited about October, guys.
October? Halloween?
Movies.
Movies.
Just back to movies.
Movies.
Movies is good.
Movies. Movies. I think for this show, though, I think the one thing that really works for me, that really stood out to me, and I didn't really catch as much the first time I watched it, but this time I did, it's the use of music.
Mm-hmm.
The score here by our good friend Angelo Badalamenti.
Badalamenti.
Badalamenti. Is really fun, and if you've got several different recurring themes throughout the show. You have this melodramatic soap opera theme.
Mm-hmm.
You have a couple of different jazzy tunes.
And, of course, the world's longest opener song.
Yeah, and
you know what you can do while that plays?
Is that the soap opera one, too?
Well, I don't know. The very first one is that Twin Peaks intro, you know, with the bird.
Yeah.
And then the sharpening of the tools, the steel mill. You know what you can do while that plays? You could watch the last episode of Twin Peaks.
Could you? Because it's so long.
My goodness.
Anyway. But you actually learn within that how a sawmill runs.
Yes.
So that's an impressive feat. But
documentary.
Yeah. But there's this wonderful thing that Lynch and the composer does, and the editing team does, where these scores weave in and out of the diegesis of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so brilliant.
Yeah, sometimes they play them on the jukebox, right?
Yeah.
Audrey dances to her theme.
Yeah. Or at the bar, when we first cut to the scene of the bar, we hear this really kind of, I don't even know what you'd call it. It's not pop.
Real new wavy.
Yeah, it's kind of really odd little song that's being sang. And then you cut into the biker bar.
Where they're singing that song.
Where this girl is singing this song on stage.
Juxtaposed. It shouldn't be there, right?
Yeah. And so it's this really awesome blending of diegesis into non-diegesis, and I think that
would be music that is score and music that people are actually listening to within the context of what you're watching.
So diegetic music is music on the radio. Non-diegetic music is the score music that our characters don't hear. Proceed.
We had to
bring it down Crayola style. Fair. You're way up here, you know, and we got to bring it back down.
I gotta help the people.
And
give
so
it to you.
I think it, you know, it's happening anymore. And
really, do we ever?
The theme with the show, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's, there's something to
just
that
the
breaking of the diegesis that may speak to the overall thread of this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may be laying. I think the music here, in its over melodramatic campiness with some of the themes, and the very smooth jazz mm-hmm. dream scores, I think there's a lot of foreshadowing happening,
mm-hmm.
and I think there's a lot of John Williams influence the viewer.
Well, and I think
happening,
it's,
and I think by the time it's all
like
said and done,
more like a mnemonics association kind of thing.
Well, and I think what Arthur's getting at, I totally agree with this. If I were to go further in the show, I have a feeling I'd find this to be correct. Is it's very subtly queuing up for those not informed, and not so subtly queuing up for those informed about the way music works in entertainment. Is that they're about to drive a truck through the fourth wall and into your face. is really just going to mess with you and mm-hmm. break conventions because yes. that's what the show's about. And I think, am I right, Dustin, that that's kind of setting up things to come?
Yes, correct.
Thank you.
And I think by the end of the show, looking back over the episodes, the music would have been one of the key rocks being thrown at that glass on the mm-hmm. log, determining what's real and what's not happening here.
Well, I just want to say, just full disclosure, I own this soundtrack because it's some good stuff.
I think it's beautiful. I think there's some really I
rocked out to it all week this week just for getting fired up for the show.
Dalton didn't get to this episode, but there's an episode we get this, I guess, and maybe somewhat famous or more recognized scene from the show.
The Red Room.
We get the Red Room dream, and he's not talking backwards, but his talking is very. It's very.
I'm aware of the scene.
It's very idiosyncratic. Regardless, I was sitting there watching it today, and as this is my second time seeing it, I didn't catch it. There's a lot of things I didn't catch the first time through. But
it's my understanding he spoke forward, they recorded it backwards, and then played it forward.
Yeah, he spoke it forward backwards.
Come again?
He spoke it forward backwards.
So the words were backwards, but the sentences
he
were
said forward. Them backwards. He could. Michael Anderson can actually say sentences backwards. So he said all the sentences backwards.
The words were forwards,
and then they reversed them so they would be forward.
So instead of the dog ran,
I see what you're saying.
The Jack chased the dog. Dog chased the Jack, or whatever.
But it would with all the consonants.
Oh, all the consonants.
I mean, fully phonetically back.
Yeah. Phonetically back. Wow.
Yeah, Michael Anderson has just the ability to do that, and David Lynch thought, well, yeah.
And why wouldn't I do this? And then played it forward. He's an interesting man.
But
if I had lots of money, I'd give him thousands of dollars so I could do TM. I'm into it. I'm curious.
As I was watching the music, it was cueing something in my head. I was like, I know this from something. I know it from something so well. Why do I know it? And it clicked. It's The Simpsons. In the Who Shot Mr. Burns episode, Lisa has a dream. In the Red Room, and the cops are doing the speak thing, and the music is playing, the jazz music is playing in the background.
Barry, Simpsons, you're so clever.
And so, which speaks, I think, something to the cultural impact of the show, which would lead me to the next point.
Everybody saw
we'll get
the third
to this
episode
a little bit later.
Twin Peaks on air.
Really?
Everybody saw it.
The big deal?
It was the biggest show in TV through the entire first season.
Wow. I did not know
that. It was huge. Everybody, starting with episode 3, it really blew up.
Impressive.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the show lasts on because, as Dalton spoke, it does, I think, influence Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
The quirkiness of all of the characters, not just our lead, but everybody has something to offer to the show. And I like the ensemble cast thing. I love
do too.
It.
I actually do like it. It's just a little
it's
much.
Sprawling.
It's yes. Yeah. Instead of introducing characters, you know, a couple at a time, they
we get everything
drop
front.
Them right in your lap.
I mean, for crying out loud.
It's very
front 30.
Yeah, there's 30 right here on this. I have a headshot.
Sheet
in front of me from the soundtrack. And yeah, there are 30 main characters, including Diane, who would... There's 39, actually.
39.
Diane makes 40.
Diane. Oh, Diane.
Lamp ladder in, man.
But, what was I going to say? But the influence of the show, I think, on Buffy and X-Files, I think any crime show, but even today, it's still resounding, because we've got a show on TV now in its third season called The Killing.
Mm-hmm.
It got canceled.
Did it get canceled?
Yeah, AMC pulled the plug on it.
Are they going to finish the third season?
Third season did finish.
The
third season finished a couple weeks ago. I think I talked about it on the show. Third season finished.
We don't listen to what you talk.
I know. Third season
you
finished
say
probably.
So much.
Third season finished right before the new season of Breaking Bad. Yeah, if you listen to everything I said, you'd never stop listening. The third season of
because
The Killing.
Because of rewatchability, though, so we can catch everything.
Just going to keep talking. The third season of The Killing wrapped right before this season of Breaking Bad started.
Okay.
And I think...
that was their summer series. Was that a summer series?
That was their summer series.
Okay.
And I think earlier this month, AMC went ahead and officially pulled the plug on The Killing.
Well, we used to have the show, which finished after three seasons, called The Killing.
Mm-hmm.
Which the first two seasons followed the same sort of the same sort of premise in which we've got a murder in the first episode,
mm-hmm.
and
of a young girl.
We go the rest of the first two seasons, at least, waiting for this story to resolve.
Yeah, and finding out that everyone's got something to hide.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and so
which
we see
Peaks.
That influence, and you know, I mean, obviously,
the Danish
Killing is a
or Swedish
reimagining reboot for I think it's Swedish. I don't know, they're all the same to me. Regardless, but I also see a lot of the same influence on the Netflix original that was completely terrible.
Hemlock Grove?
Called Hemlock Grove.
Yeah, it's garbage.
In which we get a similar premise.
I saw like two episodes of that.
The werewolf transformation is freaking sweet,
it
though.
It is pretty cool. But we have that the murder set up, and we don't know who our killer is.
Mm-hmm.
We go through trying to figure this out, and who's it going to be. And
while learning how weird the town we are in is.
Yeah, and Hemlock Grove really reflects that quirkiness aspect.
Yes.
But it's just terrible to
watch. It's not bad enough to be campy.
Yeah, it's just bad.
And it's not good enough to be watchable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I mean, this is a show that is, I think, continually influencing television and filmmakers.
For sure.
And, you know, writers. And so I think that speaks a lot to the power of it. And so, yeah. That's what I'm going to take.
Excellent. Well, you know, the thing...
Before you get started...
Go do what you do.
I do want to say that The Killing is based on a Danish television series.
Mm.
So, there you go.
Which was also based on Twin Peaks. True story.
Yes. Presumably.
Yeah, well, no, the Danish series is intentionally based on Twin Peaks.
Wait, really?
Without the quirk. It was like, we're going to do Twin Peaks without the quirk.
Actually, that was...
That's what they were saying, yeah.
Huh, interesting. I did not know that.
And so The Killing does that.
Hmm. Well, you learn something every
day. So it's like influence on influence, recycle, and across the
board. We're getting really big fans of rebooting entertainment from Sweden and Norway and the Danes.
Because America has no original thought.
Well, I mean, that's not entirely true.
Is it?
That's the people with the money don't want to give people with original thoughts money.
Huh. All right, well, we're going to do an analysis before we get any further into that.
Justin, your analysis.
I have some analysis I'd bring. I mean, there are layers and layers and layers. There are, you know, Twin Peaks is full of secrets.
It's kind of like a parfait.
And you could mine many, many things in there. I will deal with just one of the more crucial Freudian ones in there. Of course, Lynch is super influenced by surrealism. The surrealists themselves were super influenced by Freud. And there is this concept in Freudian psychology of repression, of this idea of id and libido being major driving forces in what people do. And Twin Peaks is a place where id and libido are crazy repressed, and sometimes not so repressed, and that's part of why everything's so nuts. Part of the imagery for Lynch, because it is television, and because it's more fun to do it in code than to do it outright, is the eating of food.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, to consume something. It is part of the sexual act.
Yeah.
And so,
Ooh,
you know, that's a fine piece of cherry pie.
It'll kill you.
You'll die the little death.
Yes.
So there's all of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Justin's making a goofy face, but yeah, this is not like even under the surface. I mean, I think it's right out there.
Mm-hmm.
They're not hiding this at all. I think it's totally... I mean, that's what it's all about, man.
Yeah, I mean, it totally is. And so that's what you keep seeing.
Well, I mean, even as far as I got, the one racy scene, if you will, between the owner of the mill, the sister of the deceased owner.
Oh, Piper Laurie.
Piper Laurie and
Horn.
And Horn, I mean, their racy scene is all mouth.
Yeah, it is.
He's consuming her.
Yeah, he is.
No.
And that's kind of a typical surrealist trope. You can see some art film from Europe. Jan Schenkmeyer stuff does this sort of thing as well. So it's familiar. It's something known. But it is all about this kind of, again, this libidinal energy that just wants to bust out in Twin Peaks. That's what's going on with Dr. Jacoby. I don't know if you guys observed this or not, but when Jacoby first meets Cooper.
Yes.
And, you know, Harry S. Truman.
Yeah, the sheriff Harry S. Truman.
is trying to avoid him, but they finally find themselves at the bottom of the hospital, and he's confessing that he was also her psychologist, and that she was seeing him without her parents' knowledge. There is a hula girl on his necktie.
Huh.
With a actual grass skirt, like loose grass bits in there. And he is rubbing his finger under the skirt as he says he was visited, seeing Miss Laura.
I mean, I noticed his tie had fringe. I didn't know what the fringe was.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty on the nose, but it's, you don't see it.
You don't catch it. You only see what you're looking for.
I was clearly looking for Hula Girl.
Well, that was the opposite way of how to put what I meant. But yeah, before you go on, it leads into the first moment where I was like, okay, this show is weird and loves itself. Sorry about the fluorescent lights in here, and they're trying to do this very serious autopsy. It's just like flicker, 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 and the medical examiner's like, yeah, sorry about that, guys. I don't know. lights here suck. And I'm just like, what in the world?
Well, and the next scene with him, there's a mistake in there. When Cooper asks him to give him some time, and he says, Jim. Because he thought McLaughlin asked him his name. And just flubbed the line. And they said, Jim, could you give us a moment? And he goes ahead and walks out, and Lynch left it in.
That's funny.
Crazy weird stuff.
That's fun.
Crazy weird stuff wow. in the show. I love the show a lot. Dear listener, I'm sure that's quite clear. But back to repression and this wow. kind of libidinal energy. And, I mean, you know, Dalton's right. Everybody, I mean, Laura is the girl with the beer-flavored nipples in this show. I mean, everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
Is just, what? Crazy about this chick. And that's fine. And that's actually a screen from Twin Peaks there.
Yeah, I thought so. The guy looks like Liam Neeson.
And what happens, though, is that you have Dale Cooper. Dale Cooper is the epitomization of yet another important Freudian concept related to repression.
Go on.
And related to libidinal energy. And that is the notion of sublimation.
Okay.
That you must repress, that actually Freud is not a person in favor of letting all of your desires run wild. Because if that were to happen, no one would leave home and nothing would get done. And
well, and the people that did leave home would have only but ill intent.
Exactly. So you must sublimate those desires and focus that energy in other directions to make yourself effective.
That's why I took up knitting.
And Cooper is a brilliant FBI agent.
Yeah.
And I mean, he is very, very good.
One could say Holmesian.
Yeah, quite. And but it is more in tune and the sort of supernatural transcendental meditation thing going on with Cooper, which you'll find more of in episode 3. But he has repressed positively channeled that energy so that he can effectively do what he needs to do. There's a great book by Sigmund Freud. I don't recommend books by Sigmund Freud, typically.
As a rule.
But Civilization and Its Discontents, you should read this book. Because it is about the process of sublimation and how it makes the world a better place and how you don't need to act on every desire and you can actually channel that desire in a very positive way. And that's why I have creativity, the arts, cities, art, music, instead of just making it in the bushes. And so that's a good thing.
I mean, go on.
I felt like I was in a reaction coming there.
Thinking of structuring the argument for making it in the bushes instead of doing anything else.
So
I will argue for a perfect hippie commune in the coming episode. I don't know when.
And just again, to like put the exclamation point dot on it.
Yes.
What happens later on, about halfway through season one, is Dale Cooper comes to his room to find a naked Audrey in his bed.
Yeah, God, they didn't telegraph that at all.
And nothing happens.
Good for him. Well, because she's a psychopath in 16.
Well, she's 18. But
she's 18? Well, she's a psychopath.
She is a little crazy.
She's clearly nuts.
But the thing is, and I think the beautiful thing is that Cooper clearly wants to and is not going to. And then he does awesome ninja Sherlock Holmes detective work thereafter. Because sublimation, repression, to an extent, is a good thing. And sometimes we misread Freud, and this is a very important concept because I think many times when we start talking about Freud, he says everything's about sex. And that, you know, you should, you know, the reason why you have all your problems is because you're basically not getting enough. And I want to say this, is that that's not what Freud said. And this is a clear illustration of what Freud actually was saying about repression in a positive light. Yeah. So that's what I would bring to Twin Peaks, among billions of other things.
To quote Oscar Wilde, to just put a pin in this, everything's about sex, except for sex. Sex is about power.
Right, quoting Kevin Spacey and...
quoting Kevin Spacey, quoting Oscar Wilde.
Right, which is a semi-violation of the Fincher rule.
Let me rephrase it.
Since it's in House of Cards.
Let me rephrase it. Power!
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 My Colonel Sanders voice.
Since our TV episodes are free of games, we have a little bit more time. I want to take a moment to tell you a story. Because we will not be watching House of Cards, although you should.
Yeah.
But for this marathon, we will not be watching House of Cards.
Okay.
Minor spoiler for House of Cards inbound. There is an episode of House of Cards in which Kevin Spacey goes back to his college alma mater, and it is revealed that he had a gay relationship with a good friend of his. That was in his circle of friends, that him and one of his friends had a gay affair while in college together. And I was talking to my friend about this, and she told me that a friend of hers texted her and said, "Wait a second, is Kevin Spacey's character gay?" To which she replied, "Gay for power!" And that's it. I just think it's a funny story. I love that show, and you should watch it, and it's only semi-violation.
Excellent. Well, thank you for the recommendation, Dalton. Let's do what we do now. Let's do the shelf for trash.
Let's do it.
Else or instead. I begin to my right, Mr. Arthur Gordon, if you would, sir.
Like I said, the jury's still out. It stays on Netflix for now.
Okay.
It's definitely, I don't think, trash-worthy,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know if it goes on my shelf yet. As far as Else or instead, I don't even know. I don't even know where to begin. No, I don't know.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there
you go. I'm blank. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Mr. Dalton Stewart.
Well, I'm going to go a little bit more positively than Arthur. I think, I don't know about Netflix, definitely, and shelf possibly, if only for its cultural relevance, its influence on works to come, and I'm certainly just...
General awesomeness.
And yeah, I'm very intrigued by how weird and cool this show seems to be. It's interesting. Else, I'd like to say, first off, an unusual choice. I'd say play the video game Alan Wake, which is so influenced by this show. It's stupid. And the designers of the game company, the Danish game company, Remedy, I think they're Danish, have in almost all of their games put in an element in which there is an ongoing soap opera of some kind or some kind of TV show in the background of all of their video games mirroring the events of the game. This starts in the first Max Payne video game, and in the second one it's a detective show, and in Twin Peaks it's a, or not Twin Peaks, in Alan Wake it is a Twilight Zone-y type show.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, watching Twin Peaks, I picked up on so many things I was only cursorily aware of that were references to Twin Peaks in this game. From one of the collectibles you get being thermoses of coffee,
mm-hmm.
the achievement for which getting all of them is damn fine coffee. Literally everything about it. You show up to town and everybody's weird, and yes, monster shooting ensues, but it is so influenced on Twin Peaks, it's ridiculous, and there's a definite love for that show there, and it's a fun game with a decent story. I would also recommend, we brought it up earlier, The Killing, which is not a great show by any means, but a show I have a strange affection for, in spite of itself. That's on Netflix, and is much more watchable as a binge than as a serialized piece of television, because serialized it was infuriating to watch and I gave up. But yeah, maybe check those out. There's also plenty of other quirky, weird detective stories, but I can't think of any right now, so...
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'm going to say definitely shelf, although it's
obviously
not currently on my shelf. There is a gold edition available right now with some commentaries, deleted scenes, and every episode from the series. And if any of the dear listeners wants to donate that to me, please let us know via social media, and I'll let you know where to send that, because I would love to own that. It's not beyond me to sell myself for this stuff.
No, hey, you're fine.
I'm yeah.
I dig it.
So there is that. I love, 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 love this show. What else should you watch? You should, after you watch the show, you should probably fast forward a few seasons into the show Psych and see the Dual Spires episode.
Is that a Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
With much of the cast.
That's cool.
And the brilliant Ray Wise.
Ray Wise, who
has been an actor in actually in Psych up to that point. He reprises a role as a character and shows up in Twin Peaks.
He's in a lot
but
of things.
Bobby is in it. Audrey is in it. The Log Lady's in it. There's a whole lot of folk that are in that episode, and it's just tons and tons of fun.
Well, that's cool.
I would also, with a caveat, recommend you catch Fire Walk With Me, which is the prequel to Twin Peaks, the cinematic full film prequel to Twin Peaks by David Lynch. But I would only recommend it under this circumstance. If you get all the way through Twin Peaks and you love it, then Fire Walk With Me is okay for you. If you get all the way through Twin Peaks and you like it, maybe. If you do not get all the way through Twin Peaks, do not watch this movie. You will hate it. I mean,
because it's my understanding that it is a prequel, but also serves as an epilogue of sorts.
Yes. But it is completely wrapped up in this mythology. There is no exposition. You got to know what's going on, or you don't know what's going on.
Which is why I understand that it was not well received when it first came out, because it had been a year since the show aired.
It was booed at Cannes. It did not go well.
Yeah. Well, booing at Cannes is kind of
a big
tradition.
Deal. Yeah.
Hey, Cannes, chill out.
Yeah.
Calm down, you French freaks.
That's fair. But honestly,
I love you, France, but you guys got to chill out.
If you just make it a few episodes, you're like, I like this kind of thing, but I want something more contained, Mulholland Drive is where to go. Another Lynch movie, and it was actually pitched as a pilot for a new TV series. The pilot failed. Lynch filmed some additional scenes and made it into a movie, which was nominated for an Academy Award. And it was...
Whoa, 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 whoa. Most of the movie was already filmed when he pitched it as a pilot?
He filmed it as a pilot. He filmed a pilot.
He filmed a pilot.
And they said no.
And he kept all that material for the movie.
Yes.
I did not know that. Yes. I knew it was originally a pilot. I just didn't know he shot it all.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was ready to go and no one took it. No one bought it.
Huh. I wonder why.
So, yeah. Anyway, there you go. That's what happened. And I would recommend that movie highly.
So, on that note, do you know which pieces of the film are from the pilot?
I've seen some chart work on it, but it's not clear what's going on. There are some bootleg VHSs of just the pilot that are around, but I've never found one.
As there are bootleg VHSs of the original unaired pilot of Buffy.
Mm.
There is a director's cut of the Arrested Development pilot on the DVDs.
Yeah, it's good. Nice. I think that's actually the version Hulu had when they had the rights to it. Yeah, because it involves the line, illusions, Michael. Tricks are something a whore does for money. Or cocaine. Which, Fox was like, no, you can't say that. Change it to candy.
To candy. Or candy.
Or candy. And Will Arnett, gosh, love. He's funny. The best. Anyway, so,
yeah, good show.
Good show. I like it. I'm intrigued. I think I'll stick with it.
I likes it lots.
I'll keep you updated.
Well, let's do this. I want to talk to you off air about what happens next with this show. Anyway, we have more to discuss.
Okay, no.
That we will say.
For a possible addendum to the that we'll tag on the end of this, right?
Perhaps
a spoilerific discussion, if you will.
Perhaps
if you want to keep listening. Perhaps.
So, well, we have things to discuss. I've had an idea.
Okay, all right.
So let's just hold on to that for now. Let's do what we always do, as we need to talk about social media. We need to talk about how this is a conversation and how we want to keep the conversation going. We want to keep talking with you all.
We do.
And, you know, I'd like to talk to some of you on Facebook, but you keep not answering me. Although I believe we do have one bit of feedback from the Facebook. Arthur is looking that up currently. I believe Caleb Masters,
I believe you're right.
Who watched Fellini's 8.5 with me last night, which was lots of fun.
Oh, isn't that nice?
And,
yeah. It is nice of him.
Yeah,
you're a good guy, Caleb.
There's no cut there. That was not a jib or
No one else wanted to hang out with me. It's the truth.
I was playing Grand Theft Auto 5, man. I'm sorry. I was indisposed. Plus, I was tired.
Yeah, so you said you weren't going because you were watching Twin Peaks. You didn't catch the third
episode.
That
was actually the other reason.
And you didn't watch the show.
Well, that's last night. Hold on. Last night, I finished the pilot. Here's what happened, listener. Last night, I did, in fact, if I had gone to watch 8.5 last night, I would have probably had seen half of it. I probably might have made it through the pilot. Last night, I finished the pilot, and I watched the first half of the second episode. Now, if I had pressed on, I could have probably finished the second episode, started the third episode, and by the time we talked today, finished the third episode. What did I do instead? After watching about half the second episode, I decided, screw it. I'm driving some cars off of some bridges. And then today I finished the second episode. So I'm sorry. I wanted to get through the first three episodes, but it's been kind of a busy week. And not just because of Grand Theft Auto, although that certainly played a part.
It's all right. My heart is broken, but...
Hey, I like the show.
Let's talk about feedback.
Well, Facebook is loading, but I think now that I remember, I do recall what was said by Caleb, or essentially...
Some Buffy conversation, right?
So this was in regards to Arrested Development.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because you posted the question...
Yes, I did.
...about... is there a blatant homophobia or not from the show or a sense of that?
Mm-hmm.
And Caleb replied saying that he sees and a lot of that, the gay jokes there early on, and he did say he kind of got tired of it. But he thinks and kind of agrees that through the series and by the fourth season, it's kind of faded out.
And as I mentioned, I think
rampant,
it might be a product of its time, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I'm pretty sure that's all Caleb had to say.
What? That's fair.
I missed something.
Well, you know, we saw some likes on the Facey Facebook.
Well,
likes are nice.
You like us.
Which is not quite the same thing as having
a conversation. We don't want your passive approval.
Because, frankly, I would love to talk with you about Twin Peaks. I would love to talk to you about Buffy. I would like to talk to you about Equilibrium. That's desperate.
That's how much he wants to talk to you.
But none of us. But none of us will talk to you about the Hebrew Hammer.
No,
we will.
No,
if you bring that conversation up, you will be punched.
I might physically assault you.
We may block you for life.
There's a good chance you'll get power bombed through a piece of lawn furniture. unless it's just the scene in the Nazi bar, I don't want to talk about it.
I'll even talk to you about the faculty. Oh, I will.
Now, which would you say you hate more, the faculty or Equilibrium?
Dun dun dun. I would say Equilibrium.
I kind of figured that's what you'd say.
But that's on Facebook. Where can we be found there on Facebook?
You can find us, Dustin, thanks for asking, at www.facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast. One word.
Is there any conversation going on the Twitter? Dalton Stewart.
What?
Has there been any conversation?
Justin, I need one thing from you.
What's that?
I need an affordable hotel or motel that's inexpensive, and I need three things. It only needs to have a bed, a shower, and access to the internet so I can get on Twitter.
Oh. Lamplighter Inn. Something. The Great Northern, actually.
It doesn't have to be fancy. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find us on Twitter at good_trash. I've only seen the show one time, so I know I screwed that up. But I love that bit. Oh. Great.
You know what's funny about this just now is that wasn't the question I asked you.
I know, but you usually ask me the other question first, so I was prepared to answer.
Oh.
The only thing we have coming in, we have a coming in under the corrections and omissions department from Twitter.
Oh, uh-oh. Well, thank you, Twitter.
Uh-oh.
Brigham just wanted to let us know that Arthur was correct. Anne was, in fact, played by a different actress before they cast the ever-wonderful May Whitman. That's it.
That's it.
I haven't said a whole lot on Twitter this week. I didn't prod the masses, so they... Although I will say that some band, I don't know who it was touring, some mid-level band was touring and asked for podcast recommendations, and a friend of mine, Annette, who is in a local band here, recommended us.
Really?
So thank you, Annette.
Yes. Annette,
aren't you
are
a peach?
Awesome.
She's good. She plays a mean guitar.
Does
nice.
She?
She's nice.
Excellent. Lady. I like the live music. I'll have to go out and
you should
see,
come see
the band.
You know what? While we're talking about Just
Let's
Marco.
Let's plug the band.
Just Marco. You can find, just Google them. They're on Facebook. I believe on Twitter they're at _JustMarco. My good friend David McIntyre, his cousins Brandon Hamrick and Dylan McIntyre, and their good friend Annette. They're sans a drummer at the moment, so they don't have any live shows lined up. But if you're a hell of a drummer and you like, I forget how they describe it, but I always describe them as hardcore pop punk. They could use a drummer. They're
nice.
A good band. I like them. They're fun people.
Very cool.
So, but thank you, Annette. I appreciate that.
And we are happy to keep the family of the Good Trash Genrecast big and growing and the conversation
ever expanding as if an amorphous ooze, which would threaten to take over the sentience of the human race.
That's why we're 37 episodes into this craziness.
Because far in we are.
We are, because we like to talk about movies and TV and the good trash.
Well, you know what we always talk about?
We talk about what's got us fired up this week in pop culture.
Is it time for that?
You know, it is that time.
All
Arthur
right,
Gordon,
let's do it.
What's got you fired up this week in pop culture?
There's a slide bowl of bubbling over here. I've started doing this thing, and I've kind of hinted at it because I've talked about things, but I've never really officially kind of titled it. But I guess I'm kind of going through and kind of watching the movies of 2013 that I wasn't able to catch in theaters.
Yes.
And I think last week I talked about some, I don't even remember now.
Pain and Gain.
I talked about Pain and Gain a while
back.
But
so this is part of catching up
on
the year.
Catching up 2013 because
okay.
I saw like five movies in theaters this year. So
I've seen a lot.
Regardless. I this past week I watched Now You See Me.
The magic.
Yeah,
and
you know what?
Yeah,
it's I don't know. It's very a lot. There are a lot of very convoluted sequences and scenes, as would go with I guess most heist movies. But there it seemed a little more. And there's the
heist plus
there's
magic.
The ending. Yeah, we have to have. You know what? I like the cast.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie.
It's got a good cast.
That's what drew me to the film, and that's what kept me through the film. There are parts where I kind of tuned out.
You got the Hulk, you got Mark Zuckerberg, you got God. Who's not in this movie?
And we get more of the Mark Zuckerberg Eisenberg here, and I think that's fun. Not the Michael Cera Eisenberg.
Cera Light.
Yeah.
I like Eisenberg when
he's cocky, he's got attitude.
He was
like
miscast as Cera Light when he first started breaking through. I'm liking the roles he's getting right now.
So he's and of course Woody Harrelson is fun. Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine. It's just a blast. I mean, I don't know. It's some people will like it if you like heisty magic films.
Wait,
go for it.
Michael Caine's in it?
Michael Caine.
I really had no idea he was in this movie.
Yeah, he's
our
one
friend,
of the...
Are
Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman allowed to be in movies separately? Or are they a package deal now?
Yeah, it's package.
Ebony and Ivory.
Yeah. It's the Dark Knight package. you get both of them.
It's because nobody's going to buy those action figures separately.
I'm just waiting for their wedding announcement.
Oh my God, that'd be the most adorable thing ever. Oh, sweet baby Jesus.
Tell them who narrated them.
Both of them?
Sam Jackson.
I knew I liked Andy Dufresne.
Oh man, there's a movie. Regardless, that's really probably about it for me.
Really?
It's been a week. in pop culture in my neck of the woods.
Well, so, I got a lot, so I'll make up for
it. Go for it.
Well, Dalton, yes, since you've got a lot.
Well, let's kick it off.
Blister our ears.
The whole reason we did this damn marathon was because it's TV. It's pilot season. And last night, I caught the Tuesday premiere of...
when you weren't watching Grand Theft Auto or Twin Peaks.
Oh, last night I got home. Or, I'm sorry, this would have been Wednesday night.
Oh, okay.
My bad. Wednesday night, I caught still the Tuesday premiere.
You've broken our trust.
I'll tell you guys later. It's none of the podcast business. I had things going on this week. I keep some things private, surprisingly.
and uses Twitter.
Weird. Yeah, I know. Wednesday night, I watched the season 3 premiere of New Girl, which is just a really underrated show. It is so funny, and the premise of it keeps people away, because it's like, oh, wacky girl living with three guys, blah, 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 blah. But it is so surreal and silly. It has got this great sense of humor that if you like Community, which I'm, you know, the internet loves, you should be watching New Girl, because it very much shares a similar comedic skeleton. It is all about surreal comedy, but using real, breathing, likable characters that behave in believable ways to sell that surreal comedy. So I love that show. I also, as part of a package deal, caught the other Fox's new half-hour sitcom, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, starring Andy Samberg and Dennis Haysbert. Not Dennis Haysbert. Yeah, Dennis Haysbert. No, not that. The other black guy.
Steve.
Damn it. Andre Bauer.
That's what I meant.
And a host of other familiar comedic faces. It's about a Brooklyn homicide division. It's funny cops, which doesn't sound that edgy, but it's from the guys that created Parks and Rec, so it's hysterical. It's great. It's really funny. I liked it. You should check it out. Also, I wasn't going to mention the show till the finale aired, but Breaking Bad has been so batshit bananas crazy the last 3 weeks. I just have to mention, holy crap, are you guys watching Breaking Bad right now? Because it's crazy. I seriously almost had a panic attack during the last episode. It was nuts. Moving on, I want to, this week, opening and wide release the film Prisoners, starring
Wolverine
and Bubble Boy. It looks really good. This was a film that
I thought Heath Ledger's boyfriend. I'm confused.
Either way. And also...
How'd that happen?
I was also going to say Daniel Day-Lewis's obsession. Really? Did that one went over your head?
Mm-hmm.
The guy that played Eli? I can't think of his name.
Paul Dano. Paul Dano was in it too. Paul Dano was right. Also in it. Yeah, I didn't realize
Daniel
he was in
Plainview's Obsession.
I forgot he was in there too.
It was not. It was this. This was not on my radar at all. I saw a TV spot for it, and I was just like, "Wow, this looks good." I guess it got a great reception at the Toronto International Film Festival. Got picked up for distribution very quickly. That was supposed to be a snap. I can't snap with my left. Very quickly, thank you, Arthur. It was picked up for distribution, rushed into theaters to, you know, get in time for award season. I think it looks great. I'm really interested. I'm probably going to go see it right after we get done with this, actually. Also, because I don't think this state or this city, well, we're in Norman, but Oklahoma City proper, it's a suburb, technically. It's a college town, but I think it's still part of the greater metropolitan area of
sure
Oklahoma. We are not supporting small film, and at the Art Museum in downtown Oklahoma City this weekend, they're showing, I don't know how much, if it's just this weekend or longer, Ain't Them Body Saints.
As it's just this weekend.
It is just this weekend. Well,
Since I was there last night.
Ain't Them Body Saints, a film who, I'm not familiar with the director, if I am familiar, I can't remember who it is, starring my girlfriend Rooney Mara.
Casey Affleck.
My boyfriend Casey Affleck, and my other boyfriend Ben Foster. I lead a complicated life. I tell you,
it's complicated.
It looks very kind of Badlands-y, kind of it's definitely a bit of a Bonnie and Clyde type story, it looks good. It looks really interesting, and I really want to check it out. I'm probably gonna see it. So by the time you hear this, there's a good chance it's not there anymore, but it's a film that's been on my radar for a really long time, and I'm gonna try to check it out. Last but certainly not least, it would not be a week in the good trash genre cast world if I didn't milk out a Joss Whedon reference. Today marks the 11th anniversary of the premiering of Firefly.
There you go. Brown Coat Revolution.
Can't stop the signal.
There you go. Well, thank you, Mr. Dalton.
That's all I got. Go home. The rest of the show, it might as well be over from here.
Oh, well, I have nothing to say.
I'm kidding. Dustin.
Sad face.
My good friend.
One thing I've heard about this week in pop culture is seeing 8.5 last night.
Clearly.
And having so much difficulty finding parking. Because Wicked was also showing. And I just want to say...
Oh, God, Wicked show. Is that over yet?
It's almost over.
God, I'm going to have so much hard
time. You know what I love, though? is that I was downtown seeing an Italian, surreal European art house film.
Yes.
At the same time, just a few blocks away, a Broadway play was playing. And I was in Oklahoma City.
It makes you feel like you live in a real city.
And that was kind of awesome.
Wicked's a good show, man.
And I just want to say, yay. Way to go, Oklahoma City.
Good job.
You're growing up, and it's good.
If you squint and you don't look up too high, downtown Oklahoma City almost looks like a real city. It's kind of cool sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, just, you know.
Mostly because of all the construction.
Yeah. Nice. Just very happy to be here. I am also
I like this
very fired up.
What do you
because a original director's cut and the director's name has escaped me of the 70s British horror classic The Wicker Man has surfaced.
Really? I don't know the director's name either.
And there is going to be a release.
Really?
And so I love that movie. Chris Lee, weirdness. It's awesome.
Now let me ask you something about the original Wicker Man.
The original Wicker Man. That's what we're talking about.
Not the
Nick Cage.
Awesomeness. Awesomeness with a wry grin. Does anybody put on a bear suit and punch anybody? Because that shit happens. If you have not checked out the compilation reel, the weirdest stuff in the Wicker Man remake, you got to.
Huh.
Not the bees.
Huh.
Not the bees.
Okay. That's weird.
So
but
that's
anyway,
cool.
So yeah, it's coming out. I'm excited. I like that movie a lot. It's just one of my all-time favorites, and it's really uber strange and weird, and I understand that it will be even better with the director's version. So I'm excited for that to come out and for that to happen. And that's really what's got me fired up this week in pop culture. I got those two things. So
hey, fun.
Well, you know, we got to wrap the show up. Before we do that, we got to talk about what's going to happen next week. And oh, dear listener, have we got a surprise for you. Arthur, you want to tell them what's going on?
Well, as a wrap up to Small Screen September, we are each going to choose a pilot for each of us to watch. And next week we will be discussing those three pilots.
We will.
Capping them, I think,
at
about an hour.
It might be a long episode.
It's going to be a heck of a show.
There will be things said about things of all things in nature.
The talking will be had. So, Arthur, what's the pilot you've picked for us?
The pressure's on. I am going to go with a choice from the little station that could, FX, who has brought us many, many gems. And my heart tells me two different things. Motorcycle Club or Ghost House. Next week, we watch American Horror Story.
Excellent. The pilot. That is the only episode of American Horror Story I've seen, so I'm fine with that. I'll watch it again and give it a better look this time.
Okay.
Very, very good.
I'm interested.
Well, Dalton, what are you picking?
Well, I thought about it, and I was going to do Terriers, actually, from FX, a little network that could. A great show starring Donald Logue. It only lasted a season. It's a show I've got a lot of love for that not enough people watched. You should still watch that. We're not going to do that. I want to do something really different. This has been a very America-centric, obviously, because that's where we are and we make a lot of TV. This marathon, I feel like, has been very America-centric. And I was like, no, what's something that's different but within the realms of what we've done? So we looked at the three things that we've done so far. We did Twin Peaks, we did Buffy, and we did Arrested Development. So we've got a half-hour sitcom that is a critically acclaimed cult favorite. We've got a show that is also a cult favorite that is drenched in surrealism,
mm-hmm.
and weirdness and funness.
And awesome.
And we've got a show with cast of characters that is more pop culture savvy than anybody that's ever been on TV.
And it's a supernatural.
So I put these three things together. We're going to watch the pilot of Spaced from
nice.
Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, and I'm a bastard. I can't remember the actress who plays the female lead in that show who also wrote the series with Simon Pegg. But Space is a great show. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It is the thing responsible for bringing Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and Edgar Wright together and making them the comedy triumvirate they are today. And it's a really, really fun show, and the pilot's good. So we're going to watch that.
I've never seen that pilot.
It's good.
Or any of the
it's
shows,
a great
so
show. It's a really great show.
I'm going to recommend, I hope, something you haven't watched. Because when I thought about this, I thought, what I want to do is I want to inflict upon you one of those pilots that are so good. Like that's what I thought.
Yeah,
the shows I've seen that like have great pilots, and you have to keep watching.
You're like compelled to continue.
My original selection was going to be the new version of Battlestar Galactica.
Ran a little long though,
which is a little long. And so since we're all doing all this, I don't think we should do that. But I want to say that is probably the best.
Oh, it's good
pilot ever.
Oh, it's good
TV pilots. Well, ever.
And that's the thing about Battlestar Galactica, along with many shows, But man, that show just compels you to continue watching. I don't think there's an episode of that show that doesn't end on a cliffhanger.
And my number two ranked best pilot ever is the opening pilot of a little TV series only lasted two seasons because of the writer's strike called Jericho, starring Skeet Ulrich and others.
Oh, God. That show?
Yeah.
Really?
Have you seen it?
No, it's a show that just didn't happen.
The pilot is amazing.
Really?
And it will do bad things to you, I hope. Because
now,
I'm not kind.
Now, should I keep watching, or is it my understanding the show kind of tapers off?
I don't. I liked it.
Really?
I mean, they wrapped it up at the end.
Did they have enough time to wrap it up?
Not really. But they did.
Were they able to give you finality, though?
No.
It's my understanding that...
No.
I think there's a comic book series, maybe. Or at least I know they wanted to do one.
Mm.
I don't know. A la Buffy Season 8.
So, Jericho, Spaced, and...
American Horror Story.
It'll be an interesting episode.
We're going to be looking at some pilots. We're going to talk some horror. We're going to talk some apocalyptic stuff and some science fiction.
Comedy. Well, that's not science fiction. It's pretty grounded, actually.
Is it?
It's
not sci-fi.
It's spaced out as in spaced out because you're high.
Yeah. Oh.
Not in outer space.
Yeah. I really thought it was an outer space show. I had no idea.
I'm sorry. Well, let me tell you the conceit of space in case. Because it's not like, I mean, unlike the other Edgar Wright shows, Spaced is not, it's about a man and a woman. Who want to be? They need a new flatmate because you know it's the UK, and the only flat they can find says that they have to be a couple. So they pretend to be a couple to rent this this apartment together.
Hilarious.
Yeah, but it's all filtered through the lens of pop culture drenched, Gen Xers.
Right, when Cheech and Chong sounds like.
Not a lot. Maybe a little bit.
Okay. Well, excellent. Well, I'm excited to do this. I'm excited to have this conversation. You know, what I'm also excited about.
What is
the conversation I'm going to have over the next 6 days?
What's that?
With everybody else.
Yeah.
On
all of you.
Social media.
Talking about how weird Twin Peaks is, yo.
Yeah, because it's lots of fun. What are other things you've seen? What about our recommendations? What about what we got wrong, what we got right?
What do you wish we had done this
you
week?
Know, who do you think three seasons in killed Laura Palmer? That's what we really want to know.
That was two seasons.
Or three episodes. What did I say?
Three episodes in.
I said
three seasons. Yeah.
Three episodes in. Who do you think? I think probably the money is probably riding on Leo right now.
Yeah, it definitely is, because that guy's a dick.
He's not nice.
Does he get killed? Can you tell me that right now?
I can tell you that he does not get killed.
Son of a bitch. I don't like that guy. Did something bad happen to him?
Yes.
Cool. I can
Several things.
Does it become a very Jobian trial for him? Because that'd be hilarious.
Well, no, Joe was innocent.
Jobian. I know, but Job does it become a trial of...
No.
Thing? Okay, but just a lot of...
Terrible things, and hilarity ensues.
Okay, all right.
Too bad they could only kill him once.
They're setting up how bad that guy is. I was like, surely something awful is going to happen to this guy.
Yes, it does, thankfully. It's wonderful.
And he can't be the killer because he's too bad already.
Yeah, he's a two... It's a little bit of a red herring.
You think so, do you?
Yeah, he's got a bloody shirt. That's kind of a red herring.
Huh.
Well,
I love this show.
I have so much fun. This and show, us or Twin Peaks?
Yes, this show.
Both.
This show.
Both, I think.
This show that I'm on, speaking to the internets right now. Keep the conversation going with us. You can do it with us individually on social media, especially the Twitter. Where are you at, Dalton?
I can be found on Twitter at @Dahl_Stu, spelled exactly how you'd think that would be spelled.
And Lynchian. And to my right.
It is Lynchian, isn't it?
At RNDTBL Review, as in Roundtable Review.
And I am at Dustin_Sells. That is SELLS.
As in a purveyor of wares.
As he sells seashells by the seashore. And would love to keep the conversation going.
But I got to get out of here.
With you. And we've all got to get out
of here. I got to get out of here. You know why?
I do know why.
Why is that?
Because
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.